You're listening to Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix. In this week's episode, Mick Doohan joins us to discuss Casey Stoner's chances ahead of the AirAsia Australian Motorcycle Grand Prix. And we preview this weekend's racing at Phillip Island. There's all that and more on Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix.
Hello and welcome to Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix. Matt Clayton with you for episode 17 of our show, and it's event week for the AirAsia Australian Motorcycle Grand Prix at Phillip Island. Later on, we'll preview all three World Championship classes in action this weekend with Mark Fattore, but first, it'll be a huge week at the island with Casey Stoner's last home race, and who better to join us to talk about that and plenty more than Australia's five-time 500cc world champion, Mick Doohan.
Mick, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, pleasure.
Must be the biggest build-up you can remember for some time to the event down there. It's been significant, obviously, with Casey's retirement, but just such a buzz around the event this year, probably unlike we've ever seen.
Yeah, you know, I've been told that, you know, the record numbers, especially for the last 5 years, so, you know, it should be an exciting event this weekend.
Absolutely. Now, Casey, obviously, the main story with the retirement. From your perspective, where does he sit in terms of the greats that have ridden in the World Championship? You know, is there something that really underpins the success that he's had? I mean, you and I have talked about this before in terms of his ability to switch on from lap one of the entire weekend. Is that one of the things that sets him apart?
Yeah, look, you know, all the good guys over the time have had that sort of ability. You know, they've all been strong across the board, so that's what makes them stand out. So, you know, Casey's cemented himself in the sport, in the memories of a lot of people within the sport, just for being so strong and so committed, and I think that's what he'll be remembered by, is just that, you know, his outright speed and his determination.
And really, Phillip Island, of all the tracks that can probably showcase his ability, Phillip Island might be the best of all of them with the long flowing corners. You're not talking about a lot of chicanes and right angles. It's just a perfect track, flowing circuit for his abilities, I guess.
Yeah, you know, Phillip Island's just another circuit on the calendar, though, at the end of the day. It doesn't really matter. He wins at each event, so that's what you've got to do to win a world championship, of which he's won two of those. You know, but Phillip Island is certainly a spectacular circuit. You know, I wouldn't get too carried away with the rest of all the romantic side of it all.
Yeah.
But he's certainly had some great success down there over the past years. And, you know, there's no doubting this year is going to be very difficult for the other guys to try and sort of keep on his tail. You know, in the past he's just taken off and made it look relatively simple. But, you know, he hasn't had the easiest of years this year with some injuries and so on. So this weekend, you know, it's no foregone conclusion. That's why you need to be down there to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you surprised that he's going? I mean, there's been so much talked about with the fact that he's 27 and he's walking away. Does it still surprise you that he's walking away?
Look, not really. At the end of the day, he's mentioned that over the last few years that he doesn't want to hang around. He's sort of been around for a long while, which is the case. I think at any sport, it's very rare. There's very few who, you know, in such a regimented season that go beyond about a 10-year career span when you're fully immersed in the sport. In other sports, you can sort of come and go where it's not so fully immersed and it's so basically like a flight schedule.
Yep.
And so, you know, I think he's just tired. And so did it surprise me? Yes, it did because of his age. But no, it didn't because he's just been there for so long as well. I think that's what a lot of people forget. He is 27, but he's been in the World Championship since he was 16.
That's
and
right.
So, but, you know, I wouldn't sort of write off the chance of seeing him in a couple of years' time when he decides that, you know, maybe I've still got enough years in me to come back and do a Michael Schumacher, but in the MotoGP world.
Now, of course, the other big story this year, Valentino Rossi leaving Ducati to go back to Yamaha. Are you surprised that Rossi and the crew around him, I mean, you know those guys very well, couldn't get it to work in those couple of years? Because it hasn't really gone very well.
No, you know, at the end of the day, you know, he's the other side of the coin is he's no young guy either, you know, so he's no spring chicken. And and he's set in his ways almost a little, so he doesn't really want to be pushing a bike that's not working. He tried that a few times. He started crashing on it. Ducati didn't seem to be able to respond as quick as perhaps they would have liked. You know, perhaps if he would have stayed there a little longer, then, you know, they may have been able to get the bike working a little better. You know, the results seem to be getting a little bit better towards the end of the season here. But I think at the end of the day, he does enjoy riding still. He enjoys the whole MotoGP paddock side of things. So I think he wants to make life a little simpler for himself and hop back onto a bike that he knows that he's capable of having some decent results on. You know, I'm not saying that we're going to see the Valentino of the past, but I'm sure we're going to see him running up the front a lot more consistently than we have.
And it's something that the sport needs, you would suggest. I mean, you're losing a huge talent like Stoner, obviously, in the peak of his career. He's leaving. We've not got that many big personalities in the Premier class at the moment. We probably need him back at the front.
No, but, you know, as personalities leave, others emerge. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's the evolution of sport, really, and you know, they've said that in Formula One over the years, but there always seems to be somebody else come out of the woodwork, and it's the same with motorcycling. Unfortunately, that's part of sport.
Yeah.
You know, if one guy goes, it's extremely sad, and nobody likes to see a talent like Casey or like Valentino Rossi leave the sport, but it'll make the other guys become more personalities in their own rights, and you know, the following of the sport never seems to dwindle. And,
no, it doesn't.
You know, it's just a shame that, you know, you've become attached to these guys over the years. And you never want to see them disappear. But the reality is we all get a little older.
Yes.
And we all want to move on and do something else. All the talent starts to diminish a little bit because you're not prepared to push yourself that much.
Which is a nice segue to what I was going to ask you next, which is you're going to throw your leg over the Repsol Honda on the island weekend for a couple of demonstration laps. You are looking forward to that?
Yeah, look, that should be good. I haven't ridden one of these current bikes for a number of years now, so but you know, that will be all it is. It's a ride. I'm not out there racing, I'm not out there qualifying, but you know, I want to be going fast enough to keep some temperature in the tyres and then a wave to the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, did notice the other day that the next generation of Doohan seems to be showing a little bit of speed as well. Your young bloke, Jackie's just won a Queensland state karting title, I understand. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, that's right. It's a closed state title up there, so it's only for Queenslanders, that one, but he's... You know, this year we've started doing a few more of the bigger meetings, and he's had two runner-ups in the open states, one here in Victoria and one in Northern Territory. So, you know, it's he's enjoying the four wheels, and, you know, but he's involved with athletics and football, so there's never a spare moment with, you know, with a couple of kids, with my daughter as well, chasing them around sporting fields and now racetracks.
What do you like as a sporting dad? Are you an active participant, or do you just sort of sit and bite your lip, or what do you like?
Well, you know, I've been involved with sport myself all my life, so, you know, I'm not somebody who gets up there and swears and swings my arms and carries on. You know, the kids are out there doing their sports, so I'm just there to assist, and you know, I think that's the best way to be. You know, try and encourage the kids to play in the sandpit as friendly as they can. Yes. So there's no point standing on the sidelines yelling and screaming.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't help anybody. Now, we put a question out on Facebook to all the followers of this podcast. Got a question you've always wanted to ask Mick Doohan. It's a fairly broad category, mind you. And we've got some related to motorbikes, others not. I'll give you a few of both. We've got one here from someone obviously with big feet, Sasquatch Bob Kroller, who says that with Moto 2, Moto 3, and even World Superbike producing fantastic racing, what does Mick think needs to be done or can be done to bring MotoGP back to the same level? Interesting question.
Well, you know, the premier class of every sport, really, like motorsport, it's always difficult. You know, the without going back to a more production-based series, it's always going to be, you know, which you want it to be. You want it to be the best technologically advanced motorcycle, excuse me, and then also you want the best riders on it.
Well, yeah.
Unfortunately, when you've got supreme machinery, they're not easy to ride, especially over a long distance. Yep. You know, as we see in qualifying's quite close, where everyone can do a lap on them with fresh tires, with light fuel loads, with et cetera. When it comes down to the racing, it's a lot more difficult for everyone to put those 30 laps together, lap after lap. And there's in the history of the sport, there's only ever been one, two, three guys at any given time. So I think if we want it to remain the pinnacle of motorcycle racing, it's pretty hard to change that format. And again, the Moto 3 and the Moto 2 is more production based. Yes. And so I think it's a happy blend between really having the cream rise to the top and showing who really is the best on the bike. And then that's why you also see, you know, there's some guys out there on equivalent machines to the guys would have running up the front, but they're not doing the same results.
No, that's right.
So it really does show the rider more so than just the bike. So I think that's a catch 22 situation there. It's what do you want? Do you want to really sort of find the best riders? Because some of the guys who haven't won in the other classes come and they rise once you give them a little bit more of a difficult task, rather than being some guy who can sort of ride something that's relatively easy to ride. And whereas the other guy might not have been able to piece that together, but everything clicks in the other realm. But and also for the sport to be viable, the engineers, the manufacturers want to R&D things.
Yep.
So they want to spend the money to develop and so on and so forth. And the same with tyre manufacturers. So that's why, you know, when it becomes one tyre regulation, some of the tyre manufacturers aren't that happy because, you know, the tyre manufacturers in there, they want to race the other tyre manufacturers.
Well, that's right.
Yeah. So it comes down to where do we want the sport to go? And I think some years are better than others, but it's part and parcel of prototype racing.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, of course, there's always a tendency when you have a big name leaving a category, as Casey is leaving. One of the questions here from Bronwyn Hockey wants to know, who do you see as being the next unstoppable or, you know, the man in MotoGP? And the one I wanted to ask you about was Marc Marquez, obviously coming up. Pretty impressive junior career to this point. Do you see him as someone that can straight away push at the top?
Look, you know, probably not. You know, it's the same as Lorenzo, it's the same as everybody else. These bikes are you know, in the past anyway, we don't know what next year brings. But they're a little bit more difficult to set up. They're a little bit more difficult to get the feeling out of. They're a little bit more difficult to ride fast on the edge, lap after lap after lap. And, you know, I've got no doubt he's going to be fast. I've got no doubt he's going to qualify well. And I've got no doubt there's a good chance he's going to win a Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. But is he going to make mistakes? Yes. Is he going to learn what he can get away with and what he can't get away with? Yes. Mm-hmm. So I see it's going to be sort of a 2-3 year sort of progression of him getting to the front, a bit like Lorenzo was.
Well, Lorenzo's the example. You remember 2008, he spent most of the time throwing himself down the road, but was very quick. And
the same with Valentino, and the same with, you know, everyone. There's been very few guys to come in and just go bam, straight on the pace, regardless what their history is. And, you know, the same with Pedrosa. Pedrosa had the same, if not better, credentials than Marquez.
Absolutely. A question from Grant Nicholson, slightly off topic, wants to know, what was your favourite turn or corner in your GP career as a rider? Anything stand out for you?
Don't really know. Look, you know, there's some other bits and pieces. The you know, there's an old track, the Salzburgring in Austria was a good track. It's too dangerous. It's a bit like Spa in Belgium. But up over the top, there was a, at the top part of the circuit, it's quite dangerous, but about 300 odd kilometres an hour, you're flicking left, or actually right, left, right, I think it was. You know, the bike gets a little bit airborne, but you got a guardrail on one side, which was scary, and then you got embankment on the other side. So it was good because it was so challenging, and you knew that if you messed it up, there's a good chance you weren't going to get back to, get back to the paddock in any other way other than in a box. But also the way the biker reacts through there, it was just a great feeling. But you know, a lot of the modern day circuits are all much the same. You know, whether it be a fast or slow turn, it's a it's a manufactured track, whereas Salzburgring and Spa and the old Hockenheim, they were just sort of built the way the ground was formed.
Yeah, absolutely. As a lot of the best circuits are. Mick, we've got loads of other questions here, but we are out of time. Thanks very much for joining us on the podcast, and we'll see you at the island.
Thank you.
Witness history at this year's MotoGP, when Casey Stoner rides for the last time at Phillip Island. To defend his crown, he'll have to see off arch-rival Lorenzo. With crowd favourite Rossi also racing, it'll be an event to remember. While the competition's tough, getting to the track isn't. With plenty of travel options and general admission from $45, the 2012 AirAsia Australian Motorcycle Grand Prix, October 26 to 28. Book now at Foxtix or MotoGP.com.au.
Prices quoted apply to purchases from Foxtix outlets. Transaction fees from $4.60 apply for phone and internet purchases.
Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Australian MotoGP Events. This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
Australia is the penultimate stop on the 18-round MotoGP calendar this season, and we have three World Championship classes on show at the island this weekend. To help me preview the on-track action and discuss some of the key talking points, I'm joined by Mark Vittori. Mark, welcome.
G'day, mate.
Now, the real story this weekend, the man of the moment, Casey Stoner. It's his final race at the island, we know that. We also know he's won five times in succession. He comes to Phillip Island off a podium at Sepang last weekend. In your view, where do you see his fitness, and how realistic is it that he could make it a sixth straight win in Australia?
His fitness, it's probably about 70 or 80%. He's obviously come back and started racing well before he probably should have, but it's obviously his final year of GP racing. Last week, I think he hit form in that second part of that race last weekend. The light seemed to go on, and he was pushing hard, and at the end of the race, he was obviously up Lorenzo's bum and ready to make a pass. Mm. As far as this weekend, usually at Phillip Island, we know what Stoner's like. He pushes hard from the start, 100%. That's just Stoner's way. Mm-hmm. But I think this weekend, I think he may change his modus operandi a little bit. I think Stoner, still at 80% fitness, could win the race and will win the race. But this weekend, he may change his strategy a little bit. May follow Pedrosa or may follow Lorenzo, then conserve energy for a really big push at the end. So that's obviously based on a dry race, and who knows what could happen if precipitation hits.
The thing with Stoner, we've seen the last couple of years, I was tracking back through some records, the last time anyone headed him in a session at the island, Free Practice 1 in 2010, he was second to Lorenzo. He has topped every timesheet of every on-track session for MotoGP since. Of course, last year, starts on pole, leads the first lap, leads every lap, wins the race, wins the championship on his birthday. It's hard to get much better than that. But I think the thing this year that you might see is that Friday, he might be a little bit more circumspect. He's not just going to go out there and demoralise the opposition, which we see so often with him down there. He goes out, first lap of Friday practice, and everyone else is just rolling their eyes thinking, here we go again.
Yeah, well, I remember last year, on his first flying lap, he uncorked a 1 minute 30.3, which is just absolutely outstanding. He didn't go quicker all weekend, but it was that demoralising factor built in. But I think this year, he's going to be more measured. I think it's the way he's going to approach it. He'll still be lightning fast, but I think he'll just slowly build up to real crescendo by Sunday afternoon. I think a sixth win of the row is certainly there for him to take.
Now, of course, Casey Stoner's record at the island is one thing. There's a championship battle and a very fierce one going on between Jorge Lorenzo and Danny Pedrosa. After Pedrosa won in Sepang on Sunday, his fifth win in the last six races, he's now just 23 points behind Lorenzo. Unfortunately for Pedrosa, Lorenzo keeps finishing second in these races that Pedrosa wins. But I think psychologically now, the fact that Pedrosa's within a race win, 23 points behind, it's got to put the blowtorch a little bit back on Lorenzo, and be interesting to see how he copes with that.
I think so, definitely. I think we saw yesterday at Sepang, I think Lorenzo was feeling the heat a little bit when Pedrosa pushed out in front in those when the rain really started to come down. As you said, it's less than one race now, so he's really getting there, Pedrosa, and he's developed a really, really combative edge in the second half of this year. He's once his modus operandi was taking off from the start and winning races from pole position, but now he's feeling his way. He's not afraid to pass. He's not afraid to bash fairings, and I think that's really slowly getting into Lorenzo's head, so definitely championship not over. And as we saw yesterday, I think Lorenzo nearly fell, but he held his bike up. So that could have been a defining moment in the championship. So Lorenzo definitely feeling the heat. And Pedrosa's just absolutely the top of his game at the moment. He's lap after lap, he's just on fire. He looks in control and not like the Pedrosa of old, who may crash a little bit and hurt himself. But this year, it's just he's a completely different character.
Well, how Lorenzo managed to save that at the last corner in Sepang was quite remarkable. We saw a number of guys going down there. But I think the thing with Pedrosa that's impressed me, as you said, his modus operandi was to qualify on pole and vanish. And that was the way he won Grand Prix. This year, he's won races by sitting on people's tail for half the race and then going. He won a race in the rain. I mean, it's hard to imagine that we would have said that 2 years ago. For him to win a race in teeming rain at Sepang, which was his huge weakness, shows you how far he's come.
Oh, for sure. I mean, 2 years ago, he wouldn't have finished in the top 10 yesterday, and he probably would have crashed. So, yeah, his race maturity, race craft, his skill has just improved enormously, and I think we've seen that in the last winning five of the last six races. It's been phenomenal against opposition like Lorenzo and Stoner. It's meant it's hard to win one race or one or two races in a row, but to win five of the last six has certainly been phenomenal. And we know he's going to push hard at Phillip Island. He's going to push hard at Valencia in the final round. So I think this championship is going definitely to come down to the wire.
Just as an interesting aside, that win by Pedrosa in Malaysia, it means that Lorenzo, Pedrosa and Stoner all now have 44 Grand Prix victories, which is one for the stats buffs. We've spoken about those three guys, and you know, as we should, they've taken 37 of the 48 podiums on offer this season. Are there anyone else in the lineup you see this weekend that has the potential to gate crash the top three? Someone like a Dovizioso or Alvaro Bautista has been in very good form, and dare I say, Valentino Rossi?
Valentino Rossi, a bit of an enigma at Phillip Island, and I mean, he's ridden very well some years. I think a couple of years ago, he pushed Stoner all the way. That was phenomenal. He's been a bit off his game off the last year, and obviously with Ducati, who knows? I probably don't think Rossi's got the package to push the top three, but maybe someone like Dovizioso, Cal Crutchlow. Obviously, Yamahas are certainly a known product. Maybe Bautista could sneak a nose in there, but it certainly looks like the top three, unless something goes awry, the top three will be our friend Stoner, Pedrosa and Lorenzo. And as I said, probably the wild card will probably be Dovizioso, I'd say.
Yeah, if I was putting my money on a Smokey, I reckon Bautista, he's finished really, really strongly. We know how good the Honda is. Obviously, it's not a factory spec bike, but he's had a really good back end to the year. So, no, perhaps he's the value bet if you're looking for one, but you are stretching at this point looking for a value bet. We should also touch on the other two World Championship classes that are going to be in action this weekend at the island. In Moto2, we still have a live championship after Marc Marquez crashed in the tail end of the race there in Malaysia. He's 38 points ahead of Pol Espargaro with two races to go. It should be more or less a fait accompli. Is that the way you see it?
I thought that was going to happen yesterday, but yeah, I think so. I think it's a dry race. I think Marquez will adopting a conservative strategy and just get to the line. Even for him, he'll probably still finish in the top three anyway. So I think it's probably sewn up this weekend, but we thought that yesterday before he had his little oopsie and he crashed in the same spot Lorenzo should have. But I mean, wild card, when it gets wet, these things happen. But I think this weekend, I think we'll see a Moto2 world champion crowned and an excellent talent of that. And we look forward to seeing him next year, obviously, in MotoGP.
Well, we've had a couple of tastes of his talent. Of course, last year he had a penalty for knocking Ratapak Willerod off in practice. Started dead last, 38th, ended up finishing on the podium. An absolutely extraordinary ride, one of the most extraordinary rides we've seen. We almost got a carbon copy of that in Motegi a couple of weeks ago. Didn't put the bike in gear on the starting grid, so he was basically last by turn one. He was inside the top 10 by the end of lap one, ends up winning the race. So we know how much talent he's got, and I'm, for one, really looking forward to see him on a Repsol on the next year in MotoGP.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be excellent. Actually, some really good, young, fresh talent coming into the MotoGP. It's going to be wonderful, and yeah, he's certainly... Certainly one guy is going to be around for a decade and win a few MotoGP championships, I reckon.
Now, Mark, while we're on the subject of Moto2, we have to make mention of Ant West's terrific podium at Sepang on Sunday, finishing second there in that race. The first time he's been on the podium since the British 250cc GP in 2005. Of course, it was raining. We know that he's a great mud runner, but what a terrific effort, and also a great thing to happen just before his home Grand Prix.
Yeah, it was a superb effort. He's always been a star in the wet. He won his one and only Grand Prix in the wet, French Grand Prix at Le Mans many years ago. So, yep, definitely when the precipitation happens, he comes to the fore. He really, but he probably it's a culmination of Ant turning the corner. I think over the last three or four Grand Prix, he's been his speed's been increasing. He's had some good results. He's had some point scoring results, and obviously the rain last weekend helped him to really get to the pointy end of the fields. An ideal preparation for Phillip Island this weekend, and I think he'll show a good of account of himself at the island.
He's really made a leap since that team changed the chassis. They were running the Morawaki chassis to start the season. It really wasn't working out too well. Changed to speed up halfway through the year. Did have a bit of an issue at Mugello when the seat fell off, you might remember. It didn't go too well there. But ever since then, he's actually been qualifying a little bit better, and he's running the points in, I think it's three of the last four races now. So certainly with the track knowledge he has of Phillip Island, and of course because of Phillip Island's, shall we say, capricious weather, anything could happen down there. He could be quite prominent this weekend.
Oh, certainly. Certainly if it rains. In the dries, now he's going to struggle to probably break the top 10, but in the wet, he'll slice his way forward pretty quickly, I think, if it's raining down there. He's just marvellous. I think it's his dirt track background why he's so good in the wet. He just doesn't mind the front sliding and the back sliding, and certainly comes into his own. And it'd be great to see him get another great result down there. He's had a lean couple of years, and obviously last weekend was a real fill-up for him. So look forward to him having a good one on Sunday.
The other guy I just wanted to touch on too, the winner in Malaysia, Alex De Angelis, the veteran rider from San Marino. Of course, he's won both Moto2 races here at Phillip Island. He loves the place. So he's one to certainly look out for, despite the fact he's down the order a little bit in the championship. We mentioned Moto2. Moto3, we already have our world champion for 2012. Sandro Cortese, the German. It always sounds weird saying German with a name like Sandro Cortese, but he is. He won the race in Malaysia, did it brilliantly, basically won on the last corner. What are your thoughts on Moto3 this year in its first year? And as an aside to that, we've got Jack Miller and Arthur Sissis, two young Aussies who are really starting to find their way there.
Oh, for sure. Both the Aussies have performed really well this year. Sissis is the trick in these sort of championships is becoming a seasoned rider and obviously going hard from the get-go. Probably Sissis hasn't qualified as well as he wants to, but he's certainly, in a lot of the races, really performed well. And I think next year, some really big things for him. And same for Jack Miller. I mean, it's a tough championship. I think this year it's been excellent. I think it's been really for a spectacle. It's been the championship of the year. I reckon the racing has been absolutely phenomenal, and obviously a deserved champion in Cortese last weekend, and this weekend I think you'll find the top 10 separated by a couple of seconds. As per normal Phillip Island form.
Well, they haven't exactly been holding back in Moto3. I'm a little bit, concerned and also relishing the fact that they might actually go for it this weekend at Phillip Island now we don't have a live championship. The other piece of news out of Moto3, Maverick Viñales. Now, this is a guy who, until the last few races of the season, was a championship contender. Turns up in Malaysia, decides he's not going to ride for his Avintia Bluesons team. Recently signed a contract extension with them for next year. Basically quit them on the spot, flew back to Spain and said, this is a second division team and he wants out. What on earth is going on there?
I don't know. Who knows the machinations are going behind these things? I've heard and seen some weird things happening as far as contracts are in the lower tiers of the World Championship over the years, but this one probably takes a case. So he's heading home, and who knows where if we'll see him next year in the Moto3 Championship. I hope so. He's been a great talent, and he's one that will probably go through the classes and probably could end up in MotoGP down the track, but certainly won't be seeing him at Phillip Island, though, which is disappointing.
It's hugely disappointing. Maybe he must need Paris Hilton back. Maybe that's the remedy for him. But just while we finish this section here, just a reminder that there are still general admission tickets available for this weekend. As you've probably heard, crowd figures are supposed to be huge this weekend. Ticket sales have been enormous. However, we still do have general admission tickets available. So they start at about $45. Go to motogp.com.au or call Foxtix on 1800 100 030. For more,
avoid the stress of driving to and from Phillip Island for the 2012 AirAsia Australian Motorcycle Grand Prix by taking advantage of the new and improved Catch a Coach service. With one-way tickets starting from just $27, you can put your feet up and relax in the comfort of a five-star coach to and from the circuit across all 3 days of the event. The Catch a Coach service leaves from Melbourne CBD, and this year regional areas have been added on Sunday, including Clayton, Cranbourne, Geelong, Ballarat, and Traralgon. Wheelchair accessible buses are also available out of Melbourne. Bookings essential. For more information, go to motogp.com.au. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at OzMotoGP.
And that's all we have time for in this edition of Keeping Track. Don't forget to like Australian MotoGP event on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at OzMotoGP and go to motogp.com.au where you'll find a complete archive of all of our shows. Thanks to Mick Doohan for his time, and Dom Arigato to Mastro Torre for his hard work and good taste in coffee. Thanks for listening, and join us again on Keeping Track soon.